Hi guys, my name's Sasha, and this is an audiobook called A Brief History of the 3,000-Year-Long Lemon Ant War. I started writing it as purely a world-building exercise, but set within a kind of an absurd confine of a lemon tree. I just really wanted to gain these kind of epic proportions and sit like a fat volume on my shelf. I hope you have fun and leave a review. I often know when a snail is about to climb upon my back. I'm actually very good at it. You would be surprised. The soft kneading of slimy feelers, the little plop-plopping at the base of me, and the warming of the trail of mucus under the midday sun, I am, without presumption, somewhat of an expert in the matter. But on this occasion, which just so happened to prompt my present narrative, I did not notice the sticky traveller. I had just come out of a bout of deep concentration, editing my history, when I found it a good 3 inches already up my waist. Perhaps my surprise was furthered by the fact that we had just come out of a very severe winter, and I was quite certain that all the snails had been decimated by it. I had indeed been solitary for far too long, absorbed in the unhappy affair of making sense of the great war that I had witnessed, sifting broken truths from shattered memories, ruminating on my thoughts until they turned to a poisonous and melancholic ichor. Oh, how I longed to forget the whole affair. But then the thought, if not me, then who? Who shall tell this story? As if the long winter had been an endless dark dream, I awoke therefore with a snail on my side. I had been furnished with a listener, all the more I'd heard somewhere that snails were excellent critics, so you can imagine my joy at not having only been given a polite companion by the potential editor-in-chief of my entirely memorized work. There was not a moment to lose. "Where are you going?" I immediately asked it. There was a silence. I was, however, perceptive enough to notice that its vesicular eye did pivot slightly, as if in wonder at where the question did come from. "Excuse me," I continued. "I was wondering if I may introduce myself." Still silence, but its mouth opened, its spiked tongue picking at something between its radula. It sighed, then continued its path. The sheer impropriety of its behaviour did not escape me. I had met many a snail, and this one, as plain as day, was ignoring me. "Have you no manners? Or are you perhaps deaf?" I shouted now, so loudly that the resonance of my voice almost shook its shell off its back. The reception this time was unmistakable as it quickly hit its long eye stalks within its head.
What do you want? I ain't got nothing.
"My dear friend, I am not here to rob you, but simply to make your acquaintance."
"Who said that? Better not be a fucking leaf."
The small fellow seemed rougher than I had expected, perhaps a product of the harsh winter. "I am not a leaf. My name is Sir Tribunus, 27th fractal of the Caspasius, a mountain range not far from here. To most, I am just a rock, the very same rock that you have the pleasure of wiping your slime against."
"Oh," the snail replied, "never talk to a rock. That's a first. I can't really chat. Got to be on my way. Have a nice one."
He then, by all accounts, remained almost perfectly still, though to some minute degree he was advancing in his own right. I can't help notice that it seems that we will have a good deal of time together, I said as diplomatically as I could. "Perhaps you'd like to tell me your name?"
"I'd rather not," he said.
Why ever not?
"I don't know. You might use it."
"Use it? What would I use your name for?"
"Could be for a variety of things. You can do a lot of things with a person's name."
"Are you accusing me of something?" I raised my voice and rattled his shell again. Calm down, calm down. I never accused anyone of anything. Just got a right to a bit of privacy, don't I?
It was quickly becoming apparent that I had not been furnished by a learned editor for my work, but with the most insolent, salacious little membrane. No doubt he had survived the winter by sheer pig-headedness alone. I tried to calm my temper, and imagined that he perhaps had travelled from afar, and had brought with him some foreign customs which were perfectly normal to him. Perhaps it was I who was being inconsiderate and impolite.
My apologies, dear friend. You have no doubt reason to keep your name, but I do hope to gain it from you by means of our gradual friendship and trust, so long as your path is set to my stone. I am glad you chose to light upon me, as I had been for some time now been composing the most extraordinary of stories in my head, and was in desperate need of a listener. You have no doubt yourself experienced such a thing, that there are some stories that simply yearn to be told, that need to be heard. Their home is in the hearts of every intelligent and feeling thing in this world, as God sits in the heavens above. Let me tell it to you, and if you have not parted with me before I find an end for it, then you may perhaps tell me what you think.
No, thank you.
Excuse me?
I don't like stories. My mother always said, Almond, come listen to a bedtime story. But they never would put me to sleep, just made me more anxious, they did.
Ah, Elmond, is that your name?
Oh, piss.
Well, Elmond, this isn't a story. This is a history of two great houses that did fall into the endless flames of war.
I'm not one for military history either, you know.
But this is a conflict that perhaps you are already aware of, so great and terrible it was, that from corner to corner of the field no creature was spared.
Mm-hmm. All right.
If I told you Yalron, the great kingdom of the Yellowfeet, would that not conjure the least of shivers to you?
Shiver. There you go, got one. Yalron, eh?
Good, I thought I would capture your interest.
Well, tell your story, and have it over and done with. I can't really stop you from talking, can I?
Excellent, Elmond. I took a deep breath. As deep as the awakening breath of a mountain bear after long hibernation. Let me tell you the story, then, of the 3,000-year-long Lemon Ant War.
3,000 years? Did you just say 3,000 years?
Or, to be precise, it lasted 2,978 years. But it doesn't have the same ring to it for the audience. What do you think? I don't want to suggest that I start my tale with a blunder of historical inaccuracy, but 2,978 sounds so dry and academic, whereas 3,000 rings with an ineffable power. Don't you agree?
Oh, sounds too long. I'm not going to listen to 3,000 years of this shit.
I sighed. I am afraid, Elmond, that you are already committed to the tale. I assume you need to get over me to access the field of clover at my back, and there is no other clear way. Besides, I remain confident that you have but to hear it to be compelled to the rest.
Don't talk to mushrooms, they said. Talk a lot of smack, they said. No one said anything about rocks.
I ignored his comment. An unhappy participant in my retelling was simply one that would need converting. And should I succeed, then that would be all I require to effectively judge the quality of my work. Let us begin, I intoned.
Say what you like. I'm not going to listen. I'll soon be over the other side of you.
By his current speed, that seemed highly unlikely. I resumed. For a while, all that mattered to the Lemon Feet was the void all around them, and the problem of crossing it. It is not enough for a lemon to sit aimlessly on some branch. His natural destiny is to fall. A common fate that perhaps urged an even more natural response, to jump. Faced with the knowledge that you will inevitably crash into the ground, the only thing to do about it, to preserve one's sanity, is to jump, to take your destiny into your own hands, and see if you land safely. Therefore telling fate, not today, not today. It goes without saying that it was their feet that the lemons first developed, which were followed only a few centuries later by their faces. This is why the lemon feet use many such expressions as, "A lemon's feet were made for jumping," or, "There is no great joy or deep sorrow that cannot be improved with a pair of feet," or, "A man who has 10 toes can never be too sour," and so on and so on. Once legs and faces had thus been acquired, the lemon feet's societal advance quickly accelerated. They built a thriving metropolis in the great and ancient tree Yalron. Not a month passed when some new invention did not appear, disrupting their lives with unforeseen ingenuity. Leaf architecture was developed, so new homes could be built in the higher dimensions of the tree without damaging it in the slightest. Sapcraft, or the art of making objects from the sap of Yalron, tempering and hardening the substance into an amber as hard as iron, did also improve their lives immeasurably. But with all these advances, the lemon feet forgot about their original love for jumping. They had strayed from what it meant to live a plain and honest life, and many regretted the earlier days. Some regretted the days where they had no face even, but these were half-brained extremists that no one took seriously. That is when a small group of nostalgics discovered the pit. Located deep underground and accessible only by some ancient corridors at the base roots of Yalron, the pit was an immeasurable void covered with a vaulted ceiling, pockmarked with the holes of many nameless, tunneling things. But the most prominent of these things were the ants. Their writhing mass of bodies poured down fearlessly into the hole as if a waterfall, a wave of mandibles as seamless as a ripple in a still lake. Sometimes the darkness of the pit glimmered with them, so that you wondered whether they had filled the void completely and that a fall into it would simply be a sinking into a glass full of tiny carnivores. It was over this ant-filled hole that a small group of lemons decided to jump again. Their legs, naturally strengthened by walking up the branches of their tree, would clear the jump with ease. The dare was not completely without risk, however, as some did not make it, almost as if they had been sucked in, against their strength and will, to the bottom of the pit, to be devoured by the ants. You may laugh and claim that nothing could persuade you to jump. So too did many lemons, until they were actually facing the task, and feeling the close brush of death, were inexorably drawn to a rush impossible to deny. Do not underestimate the pull of death. It has precipitated far more civilizations to ruin than there are blades of grass in a treeless valley. And it was precisely this feeling that too brought the ruin of those who dwelled in the great tree Yalron.
So who won?
Almond suddenly broke the rhythm of my narrative.
Who won what? The war. Who won it then?
I was pleasantly surprised at his question. It showed at least a certain level of interest, that was for sure.
Patience, dear Almond. The players in the great game have not yet been introduced. The stage has barely been set, and besides, there are no certain winners in a war.
Well, it's probably the ants, because you just said Yalron collapsed. Elmond?
There, you see, no need for the 3,000 years, then. We can leave it at that, can't we?
We will come round to the ants in due time, but rest assured, their cities too also collapsed.
But not like Yalron, yeah?
I did not dignify his comment with an answer.
Am I right?
Oh, Sam, I'm right, am I? It was by some chance that when I originally rolled down the hills of Kaspari, I made the acquaintance of several wandering caterpillars, who were wont to skulk in the halls of the great ant hills. Being so adept in the pheromonal manuscript interpretation, they were able to give me the skills necessary in decoding the archives of the great hill. From them, I was able to approximate the day and series of events that set in motion that great conflict. On that day, a young ant called Aethil, graduating from his larval pod, was decorated with three imperially commissioned pheromone stamps. One was to dig on the western corridor, the second was to clear it of debris, and the third was to drink from the pool of water beneath the southeastern branch of the colony, to determine if it was poisoned. Avril thought best to attend to the imperative of these stamps that didn't imply his end, and preferably would attend to them in a way that would indefinitely postpone his final task. The western corridor that Avril was sent down happened to open up to the great corridor used by the Lemon Feet, and at the very moment that he walked across it, did his mandibles impale themselves on the foot of the Princess of Yalron, Yelani Yellowface, the fairest lemon-born of the Sour Maidens and daughter to King Bitterfoot. She lost her footing, and having readied herself to leap across the void, instead slipped and fell, screaming to her death.
"Well, when life gives you lemons," Elman said smugly. I am sorry. Is that meant to mean something?"
"Well, it's an expression, you know."
"No, I don't."
"Oh, just forget about it. I'm just trying to lighten the mood a bit."
"Lighten the mood? This is far from a laughing matter. I am retelling the beginning of a war."
"Sheesh. So what now? The war's begun, I guess?"
"No. For that we must understand more keenly the main actor that took this foul accident and used it to weave the noose to place around his own neck, King Yobrotl the Unsteady."